When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
What's up, buddy?
How you doing?
Wow, man. Look
hello,
at you go.
Hello.
This, hello.
Your setup is really putting us to shame here. You've got like the velvet seats going on and these are they sort of fancy animal portraits? What's going on back there?
Yes, it's self-portraits.
They're self-portraits.
It's how what I look like on the inside too. What's up, Dom? I haven't seen you in like
I know, it's been a minute, eh?
In over 10 years.
It's been over 10 years. No, I'm good, dude. I'm doing really well. I just finished this TV show in New York, and then on the back of that, I've just bought my first house, which is really exciting. So I'm
congratulations.
Thank you, buddy.
I know, everybody's so I'm growing up.
Slowly trying to figure out, you know, grown-up stuff like council tax and all that jazz, but it's getting there bit by bit.
Yeah, that'll put some gray hairs in you. So
seriously. Tell me what's new with you? What's been going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
I've this past couple of years just, you know, trying to be a dad.
Yeah.
That's been really wonderful.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so it's a lot of work. It's a big shout out to just parents in general. You know, I thought what we did was really hard, but this pales in comparison for sure, but it's one of the coolest things ever. And learning a lot about humans, that's the biggest thing.
I bet. Well, because it's a weird thing, isn't it? Like the process sort of evolves, like, I mean, from my very limited knowledge of what it is, like, you know, the way that it was sort of normal to raise kids when we were kids is now like, oh no, we got like a whole new bunch of information now.
And then add the pandemic on top of that. I mean, you know, between the two of you, I have no doubt you had an amazing time, but also it must be sort of difficult, but fun at the same time.
I mean, yeah, I think it has to be both. You know, we always think about it's like, you know, it should be the greatest time ever. And it's like, no, it's not. You know, it's not, it really isn't but you can't have that without then it'll lead to some of the greatest moments. If that makes sense.
Totally.
Like, if you have great moments every time, then like, well, what is the point of anything?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think for those times when I always think about like, oh, how many of those days would I have been gone for like 8-10 hours? And to have that and to really get to know a person is just really incredible. So beyond just having kids, I think, you know, whether you're with your sibling or your a loved one, you know, I think you get to really know every side of them. And I think that informs you a lot on how you want to approach it.
Totally. Like, so this ties in perfectly to this story that I very often tell about you. Like, I was literally talking to my girlfriend about you 3 days ago. The longer I worked with you, the more I got these little, like, someone in the ether would be like, you know, Harry did this, right? And I'd be like, no way. Fuck off. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Someone would be like, you know, Harry, you remember the iPod ads? And they'd be like, I'd be like, yeah, of course. Remember Harry was the original silhouette for that. And I was like, what? And I'd go back and watch it. I'd be like, sure enough, there's his silhouette and his hat. Like, that's Harry. That's how he moves. That's crazy.
Yeah. And this is what's so astounding about you, Harry, is you're one of the most humble people that I know. And yet you've done so many things and you've been in this industry for so long. But we always find out about it circuitously. We're like, wait, I'm sorry, what? I mean, I'm not surprised at all. Harry's a supremely talented individual and has kind of done everything. It's so astounding, the fact that you have done so many amazing things and yet are still the wonderful person that you are.
Oh, no, thanks, y'all. I always just feel like I stumbled onto these things, and like, you know how you like kind of stumble and set and like, oh, and action. You're like, oh, yeah. And you try to do as best as you can. So I still feel that way.
Fake it till you make it, baby.
Yeah.
I tell this story a lot about you, and it's something that I was a dancer growing up as well. And so, you know, I think all of us looked up to you and Isaiah and everyone who'd been through these sort of experiences before and, you know, had been in processes that had longevity and that you dealt with fandoms and you dealt with all of this crazy up and down roller coaster that we were about to embark on. And I just remember sitting in my living room in Kansas City at, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, watching you on Glee and going, oh my God, the way Harry moves and how he dances and how he brings character into it and everything else. I want to move like that. I want to dance like that. I want to figure out how he does what he does. Cut to several years later, I'm working with you and, you know, you're becoming a friend and a mentor. And I've been in awe of you for so many years. And just the fact that we get to sit here now and reminisce about one of the journeys that transformed each of our lives is amazing.
So funny. I had such a similar experience.
Yeah?
Yeah. I remember there was one scene in particular in Glee that really stands out to me. And I remember it. I can't remember what I was doing. I actually think I was doing like Fame or something at the time and doing like a terrible job at it. And then I was watching Glee and I was like, maybe I can move like these guys. And there was an episode where Mike, you say you want to sing for the first time. And I remember sitting there watching
it
like,
love this episode.
Let him fucking sing. Please let him sing. And I was so invested. Like, so there with him. I was like, let him sing. Let him have a go. That was really cool. Speaking of dance and your background, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you sort of got into dance and how that, you know, formulated within your young self?
Let's take it back to the beginning. We want to know what makes a Harry Shum Jr. because we need more of them in this world.
Wow. You know, I get asked this question a lot, and sometimes I have to, like, you know, you have to give the 1 minute version or the 30-second version, and you know, no one wants to hear the 20-minute version, but I
think they might on this. You've got as much time as you like.
Well, I was just very shy as a kid. I've been processing that, like, why was I so shy as a kid? And, you know, kind of moving from Costa Rica to America, specifically San Francisco, I just found it really bizarre. And just the culture shock of it all, I think, started to really make me shy because I always felt I was going to say the wrong thing. And I didn't realize how, you know, I didn't really speak English. And, you know, at that age, it's easier to learn any new language. Mm-hmm. But 5 and 6, it's not just learning a language, it's learning a culture and learning how people interact with you. And I kind of shut down and didn't do my homework. I didn't know how to do anything. Like, I didn't know when teachers were talking in class, I just kind of just shrugged my shoulder and went home. My parents got called and, you know, they kind of couldn't speak that much English. So the teachers were telling them, like, this kid doesn't do his homework and is not paying attention in class. And my dad's just like, okay, so is he in trouble? And over time, I just, academia, like, just learning kind of in classrooms just really, I think, would have put me in a bad path because I didn't have the capabilities at that point and no help. So I think dance was something I watched and I was like, oh, that's a fun way to communicate that I just get, that I didn't really have to learn, even though, you know, obviously you start learning techniques over a period of time, but just like kind of like the initial movement of expressing yourself was something that I just like would watch Michael Jackson. And, you know, at that time, it wasn't like YouTube where you can type in dance and then you see like millions of videos of dance. You know, I didn't have that. So music videos started to become like a thing where, you know, watching Madonna's Vogue and then you're like, oh, that's neat. It took me until really junior high, serendipitously walking into a drama class and saying, well, I want to join because it just looks like people were having fun. Not because I watched movies and I was like, I want to be an actor. I want to do that thing. It was just to fit in, to feel like, what is this language being spoken in here? You know, I started doing improv and then mainly being casted as background actor, which really said a lot when I got on the Glee. I was like, I got really good at being a background actor. Just because I remember that one of the teachers like would make me an example of like, well, look at this guy. You know, he's in the background. He's like living his life back there and not trying to upstage. And so like, everyone do that. And I was like, oh my God, like I'm a good background actor. Awesome. amazing.
And so important.
It's so important. That's why I give so much props to good background actors, because you can make or break a scene. And to people be like, well, they're just backgrounds. Like, that's bullshit. Again, it's the gestalt of like, it's the whole of it, right? You know, if you're making a movie, you need to care about the whole of it, not just the mains or, you know, the above the line. It's just like the whole matters. And learning through that, you know, as I slowly moved up the ranks, and then there was this musical that we did and it had dance. It was like a 1950s, like it had swings. So we had to learn how to swing. It was my first time actually like dancing, learning dance properly on stage and not just dancing in my bedroom like an idiot. And I just, I remember that feeling and I was like, oh shit, I'm kind of like, I get this. Partnering was something I wasn't really good at. I'm still not good at, because it just makes me nervous, because you have to have someone you trust in front of you to do it. And then they have to trust you. But once that happens, it's like beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. From then on, like, you know, I got into high school and I stopped kind of doing plays. It just wasn't a thing that I was like really into at that time. Then there was this audition for the dance team in high school. And it was very similar to kind of Glee. It was like, there's no boys. I mean, except for like one or two. And then all like kind of the jocks were just like, hey, wouldn't it be fun to do this? And then we all auditioned. And then ever since then, it just became like we're choreographing dances. And then it just became like something cool to do. And from then on, like it just kind of snowballed. It's just odd because I didn't set out to do any of this. It wasn't something I told my parents, like I wanted to be an actor. It just kind of like, I didn't want to go to school. I just didn't want to go down that path because I sucked at it. I was like, I have to do this. I have to do it well. I have to do it as best as I can. I have to learn about the business. I have to be kind to people, to myself. And hopefully that'll start to become, you know, a big part of the how I naturally progress in this business. And I told myself, like, once it stopped becoming fun, then I'll stop doing it. And that is just kind of where I'm at right now. I've been really fortunate to have these experiences, to meet people like y'all, and be able to even talk about this is honestly just like a privilege. But dance has been a big part, and I give a lot of my everything to, as far as even acting, to dancing, because the physicality of it I think is just as important as, you know, how you're approaching a character, because that says a lot about people that we kind of don't really put too much emphasis on as a language. And, you know, we always focus on the dialogue and focus on like what is being said, when I think it's just important. We all know as actors, like what is not being said is just important. But what is not being said is either the stillness, which is still a major part of what the opposite of that is, movement. So how you are sitting and how you are moving to grab that glass or even approaching a person matters. So my long rant is done.
Dude, I couldn't agree more.
Well, no, but it's interesting that you say that, though, as all three of us being dancers or people with dance backgrounds, it's interesting that you mentioned how many elements of that kind of cross over, be it the trust you have in another person or the thought about physicality and the creativity that you have to carry that through, especially when it comes to shadow hunters and, you know, creating these characters and these creatures. And all three of us had to kind of figure out, you know, how do these people move and how do they exist in the world, and put our trust in each other that we all were creating this cohesive world. And it's funny how life can sort of set up situations and experiences that kind of lead you into what you need to have as you're moving forward.
Totally. So Kat, you go. I'm choking.
Yeah. Dom, please don't die.
Dom is dying.
There you go. See, comedy. This is a comedy podcast, folks. But, you know, let's talk a little bit too about your, you know, once you started in this professionally, you were touring as a dancer. You know, tell us what that life is like. That's something that I've never done. That in the whole industry seems so fascinating. And again, another grueling, but also probably really rewarding process.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Touring is, when I first moved to LA, actually I didn't move to LA yet. And I booked this like music video. And, you know, at that time I was like, if you book a music video, like you're good. Cause I used to watch them growing up, and that was like a dream just to be part of it. The first week I moved to LA, I was auditioning so much and I wouldn't get anything. And then I took this dance class, cause I was taking like 5-6 dance classes a day. Just
a day?
Hopping around, driving around LA. Yeah.
Oh my God, Harry.
There's this place, Millennium.
Yeah, that Millennium.
Millennium was like kind of during that time was huge for like dancers. You pay, I forgot what the price was, like $80 a month, and you get unlimited classes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Being like a poor, like hungry dancer, you're just like, like a buffet, like how much can I get for this amount of money till my feet fall off? But this one, actually, it was at the Edge. It was a different dance studio that I just happened to take these classes. And these two choreographers, Rosero and Jamal, saw me, and then they just kind of asked me on the spot, would you like to go on this tour? And I was like, oh, what? I was like, is this how it works in LA? I thought you have to do it this way. But I think they needed someone. It was leaving in a week, and it was just for this young artist named Casey. She had a really big hit in UK, so it was traveling into tour Europe at the most craziest spots. Like, and it would open out for O-Town. I'm really dating myself. O-Town was this, I think, making the band, where they won the competition. Anyways, like they're huge during that time, and so we opened up for them. That tour life was just, it was crazy because we played all the way from big stadiums to like barns to like fairs and to like bars in like Ireland and Dublin and Cork. I just got to go to these places that, you know, when I was 18, my God, like I saw so many things. I felt so many things, and there's nothing like having thousands of people like just piercing screams and to be able to be on that stage and feel that energy. I think that's the coolest part of it all. And then you hear the band kind of going and just being part of the environment, which gets addicting. I can understand why people just keep going on the road. And after a while, you know, and I went on tour with Beyonce, was only the second tour. I only done a couple of tours. And then when I did Beyonce, obviously that was on a bigger scale with like Missy Elliott and Alicia Keys. I just remember Alicia Keys would kind of go two acts before us, and I would just having this luxury of this badge to go anywhere you want.
The access all areas thing, that little...
The access all area, you just felt like the highest of the VIP, whatever you want to call it. And I just remember, if I can't have you, every time she would sing it, I would walk out, sit in a random seat, and I was like, this is fucking crazy. Every single day I can come out and hear this beautiful song by Alicia Keys played differently each city. Like, it's that was insane to me. But I also feel like that was a big part that kind of what really made me realize that, you know, I didn't want to keep doing this was I was like, this is such a beautiful thing. I know I can't get stuck doing this because I have so many ambitions elsewhere, but it's such a beautiful thing where you know, the traveling sucks. I'll tell you that. Being on a tour bus sucks. like you're kind of like sleeping in a bed that like has a wall right here, has a ceilings right here. And, you know, you're living in a really shared space. You have to wake up at 2 a.m. to like just go walk into a hotel. And, you know, these are champagne problems. So I'm just saying, like, in the scope of like, do I want to keep doing this for years on years? And I was like, I think this is a pretty cool experience. I think I'm done touring. And then we got to do, you know, years later on Glee, we got to do these tours, which was, that was cool because I got to experience the other side of, you know, helping choreograph the opening number with LXD and then also being part of, you know, the main act. It was just, I got to be behind the scenes and it was just really neat to kind of relive that in a different perspective. So I highly recommend if you ever get to just even experience it, like, tour life and just even tag along with people that are your friends that you've met. Like, it's just a cool atmosphere that I understand why it's a massive industry, because you just feel that energy that I think why music is so powerful, and it's very different than acting, obviously.
Yeah. Well, and also I have to say, it says a lot about you as a human being and an artist that you even be having the all access badge and having, you know, the champagne problems and all of that, that you still can sit down and appreciate the beauty in these special moments and appreciate the fleeting nature of the things that we get to experience. Because so many people lose sight of that. And I think that's when they start to lose their humanity. But that's something that, you know, you're clearly very cognizant of. And that's an incredible, incredible quality.
Thanks, Kat.
Mother's Day is coming, and mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Why don't we talk a little about how you got involved with Shadowhunters? Kat and I have been through to the day's end our casting experience. Why don't you tell us what drew you to it, and then what was the process like getting involved? Because I think I had always kind of assumed, and I remember you telling me that that wasn't the case, that this was your role from the beginning. Like, they were like, we've seen this guy, it's an offer, like, we're just going to give it. And I remember talking to you and you were like, no, man, I auditioned like everybody else. I was like, wow. Because we can't imagine anyone else sitting in that role, you know.
Well, because when they announced it, we all went, well, obviously. Makes perfect sense. Yeah. But tell us how it really happened.
You know, I'm still not too familiar. I mean, like, the way that this industry works, just for people to kind of know, I think we're getting more of an inside look on how people, they get an offer, and then, you know, you as an actor decide if it's right and if all the elements kind of align to the things that make you want to be part of a show for 6 years during that time. You know, I think it's starting to change a little bit as far as like how long the commitment is. But, you know, that was the commitment. So it's getting into a long-term relationship, right? And then, you know, you're hoping that it's gonna last, and you know, you're going to have a good time, but not just that, but it's going to be fulfilling. And I didn't have that other than casting saying that, you know, they really, really are interested in you being part of this and having this character. And I think part of that is also the limitations on, and I'm just speaking on kind of like the logistics of it, of how, you know, it was really important for them to find an Asian actor. But, you know, at that time, you know, there are only selected few that had the experience, I guess, to be able to, you know, be part of an ensemble cast. And, you know, I think there are probably many, many that could have done a wonderful job playing Magnus Bane. I just happen to be one of the lucky ones that, you know, had some sort of resume. But still at that point, you know, I had to go in and audition. And I suck at auditioning. I'm terrible at auditioning. I'm loving these self-tapes because I get to just be a bumming idiot kind of. Because you're just figuring it out. You're figuring out and you're trying to be like, you're testing this thing. And then, but also you're thinking like, this is not the only way I can play it. I can play it in other ways. Like, I'm just trying to give my best take on it. Mm-hmm. But with the beauty sometimes of auditions, and when you have a casting director that says, that was interesting, let's try something else. I just feel like when that environment is there, which it's unfortunately not in a lot of ways, like, because just not because of casting's problem, but the time, like, they don't got time. Mm-hmm. They got to see like hundreds of actors. Like, I don't got time to work. Like, you better bring something. And that would always just make me nervous. So going into that audition, like, how do you prepare for this role like that you just got a couple days ago? You know, you do the best you can. And I actually understood what I needed to do for the role, but the lines would just trip me up. So I kept fucking up. I couldn't get the lines out. I was like, oh my God, I'm like ruining this whole audition. But, you know, Michael Reese, who was a producer on season one, who really wrote a lot of Magnus's stuff, he was in the room, and his generosity and also patience of like, just do it again. Mm-hmm. I swear to you, I did it probably like 6-7 times before I like actually got through it. Yeah, yeah. I couldn't get the words out for some reason. I don't know what it was. I don't know like where my head was at. It just, I still to this day can't figure out of just maybe nerves of maybe, you know, like the pressures of getting a job and getting this right. And also, you know, at that time, there wasn't very many roles that you're like, yo, if you don't get this role, and it's specifically they're looking for an Asian actor that can play this warlock, a bisexual warlock, and just all these elements. And you're like, well, you know, all those things I still need to learn and trying to capture that. But, you know, if I can't even get this, like, as an Asian actor, like, what other roles can I get? And I think that's an added pressure for me during that time, because it's like, well, if you don't get this, that's specifically kind of, I guess, that they're really seeking you out for, then, like, then you're not going to get shit after this, in my mind.
So interesting. So
I think that all those nerves started to, like, kind of really come. And but it was really sweet of Michael to really, just allow me to do it. And finally, when it happened, they're like, cool, we're going to send this off. Kind of the rest was history. But I think that's what's important about it. And it's also hard because we're just like, it was just so fast paced, and we're just trying to get things like to give a little bit of grace for people that you actually like see are getting it. If you just give them 2 more minutes, and then, you know, after like fucking an hour, you're just like, all right,
that's enough.
Go home.
Yeah.
So luckily I didn't take an hour or so, but
I think that's something that's so wonderful about our creative family on Shadowhunters is that everyone did have a lot of grace for each other, you know, whether it was the cast or the crew or the designers, and everyone sort of set their egos aside because we all saw something in this story and in these characters, and we just let it kind of grow. We sort of tended our little Shadowhunters garden together and let it grow into its own creation.
Michael especially, that's sort of one of like three or four stories I've heard from Michael where he was just like, trust me, this is going to work out. And he sort of had that creative eye where he was like, I can see these people doing these things. Literally just from casting. I know he had a moment with my casting where someone had mentioned like, I don't know if he's a leading man. And Michael was like, just wait, just trust me. And then when they were doing the list of the Jaces, he brought my name back out and they went, I'm not sure. And he went, watch Taylor Swift's music video. Yeah. And they watched that and went, oh shit, all right, fair enough. And that was Michael. That was Michael who put that forward. And I was like, so,
wow.
He really did have like, we owe him quite a bit, I think.
We
should
get
him on the show and say thank you.
We'll get him on the show. Shout out to Michael.
But this is awesome. Congrats putting this together. And
thanks, bud. Yeah, it's been so much fun.
This is a cool reunion.
It is.
Yeah.
The fun thing about a podcast, especially for a show that you're not on anymore, is like it really is kind of open season. Like there's no real filter.
Yeah.
And 90% of it is very positive. And we look back and actually we did something really amazing and we achieved something really cool as a team. But then there are times where it's like, actually, this was shitty. Like, this really sucked. And we're allowed to say that because the show's not on anymore, you know?
Yeah. And that's why we wanted to do this, because we have so many stories that we couldn't tell at the time because of spoilers or this or that or whatever it was. And now we've had enough time and space from it that we can look back on it as, you know, from a bird's eye view. And of course, you were at the top of our list.
You're right. I mean, Dom, just talking about how, you know, wonderful, all the wonderful things we did, and then also how grueling in some ways it was, just mentally and physically in such a short period of time making a show like this, and the pressures of to not get it wrong or to get it right.
Right. Yeah. Whichever way you want to look at it, however full your cup wants to be. And especially from you guys, you know, Kat and I talk quite a lot about the pressure of getting Clace right and that relationship and whatever. But sort of from the beginning, I think from that, like, do you remember that first time we went to New York and McGee brought the couples, the Clace couple and the Sizzy couple and the Malik couple up to the front of the stage? And we heard the three sort of consecutively louder cheers. And Malik was the last one. And it was fairly supremely evident that, like, wow, these are everyone's favorite. Like, these are the ones that
in
people
other words,
are rooting for in this.
It was deafening in the best way possible.
Yeah. And there was a lot of pressure on you guys, right? To get it right.
Yeah.
I mean, that, and I think everyone, you know, everyone had their own pressures just coming from a book and people's images of in their heads, which can go from anywhere. I just think there's something really beautiful that happens when, as a book reader, obviously something else happens in this medium where, you know, you put it on television and the visual medium does something really interesting because it not just lays it out for you, but I think what was fun about this show is the fact that there was the in-between time. And a TV show, it ends at a certain point. And then, you know, then the imagination kind of starts because you're like, well, why did they do that? What is going on here? Then when they talk to friends on social media, I think it just brings a different element than any other show during other eras were able to which I've never got to like be a part of that. And I think that was really exciting and also very daunting as well.
Right. Well, that's part of why we wanted to do this podcast, because you know the power of the Shadow Fam and you know how much conversation and love and everything there has been from the show since day one. And it's sort of a way for folks that are still kind of clamoring for this story and for these characters. It's a way for us to say thanks and also continue to live that out as, you know, our continued love letter to the Shadow Fam. So,
yeah, it's like it's gaining. I think I was talking to Matt the other day and he was like, yeah, a lot of new people are watching this show for the first time. And it just, that kind of blows my mind.
Dude, it's crazy. Like, because Matt and I were just at a convention in Dusseldorf. And it was probably 50-50. Like at these conventions, we very often see the same people who come every, and this was the first one where it was like 50-50 people who were like, oh, we just started watching it over the pandemic. And I was like, wow, no way. We were done filming over the pandemic. That's crazy that this whole new like group of people is starting to watch the show. Harry, I had a question for you that somehow I've never asked before. What was your process of landing on Magnus's physicality? Because we, Kat and I have spoken about this, especially in season one, you know, the sort of titular role of whatever the sort of race of the Shadowhunters was. So you or Luke or Alberto or Simon, sorry, Isaiah as Luke or Alberto as Simon, you sort of had the responsibility of like, this is how these characters are going to be. This is how these, you know, warlocks are going to be. This is how they're going
to
move.
Yeah, you were our first warlock. You got to establish that.
Establishing like the physicality of
all of it, you know, landing in his shoes.
Jeez, man. It's, you know, what's funny. It's like every role, like if I don't start talking about it in like 6 months after, I kind of really just start to, I won't say forget, but it starts to really kind of move behind, like in the back, right. And then I have to like really pull it out. And I just remember having this book that I just threw everything on there, every thought I had, every image that I got from, whether it be magazines or I've had to print out, and I cut out and made this collage of books of just random images of, you know, whether it be like fashion, rock icons, and then seeing the way they move, seeing the way they talk, and all the way from that to like K-pop to even throughout the throughout the period that like Magnus was alive, you know, I think anything goes. So those, it was a lot to pull from. I mean,
right.
What this character could have seen or might have seen or wanted to see or didn't want to see, putting all those images, even the darker ones that I didn't really ever talk about, which were disturbing because, you know, he went through a lot, and how depressing it might be to, like, you know, the show obviously went into it of losing so many loved ones and knowing that, you know, you'll never go away with someone like we imagine in our heads. If you like fall in love with someone, and then, you know, it's the mortality of it all kind of allows you to kind of not exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started kind of going through that and then using humor as something to be able to cover that up. And then it started building off of that, and it kind of naturally started to happen once all that foundation was laid. Because I really truly believe, you know, if you move away from the darkness that is possible inside your heart, then the closer is going to come in the worst times, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think being able to understand that as much as possible, it'll just make life a little easier, because at least you'll know that that's possible to come, that darkness is possible, and it's always there, just because as us humans, we have to have both. Just like you're able to, like anger, for instance, when people are like, I don't want to be angry. It's like, well, you just need to know how to be angry, because that's just a human emotion that's not going to ever go away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I don't know how like I got so deep in philosophy, but no, that's kind of how I looked at it.
That's why we're here. No, that's interesting that you say that too, because there's such a duality to Magnus in that, it, as there are to each of these characters. Each of our characters is so, even though we're all supernatural creatures in one way or another, they're so human because each one has their own darkness that they're fighting against. And each of the creatures, you know, their warlocks, for example, are half demon. And that's an interesting element to kind of play upon, and his past and everything else, paired with the fact that he is this icon in the shadow world and also in the fandom. It's interesting to hear you talk about balancing those two elements together. You're just brilliant.
I agree. I think we all have gushed about how much of a phenomenal job you did. Because we get asked that question a lot, don't we? If you could take on another role from the show, which one would it be? And my answer is never Magnus.
No, like, I don't even
could
it.
Do that. He put so much into it, and that's Harry. That's Harry's thing. I'm good. Maybe one of the others, but that's Harry's thing.
I think it would have just been a different interpretation. You know, I think y'all, like, there's just so much wiggle room for, at least when you're talking about like time periods that, you know, you can kind of play. Cause I just think he was different in every single time period. So it's not to say like which is right or wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've also lifted it off of what it was in people's imagination. So I also want to say, you know, on this podcast, how hard you both work. I mean, everyone, but like, since you're in front of me digitally, you both just work so freaking hard every single day, and especially sometimes never have done it before as far as how taxing it was physically and also mentally. But these roles weren't easy. You know, I think as far as our industry goes, you know, they look at a show like this and just call it like, you know, young adult. Oh, it's young adult stuff. And it's like, it's not that big of a deal in the sense of like how we deal with adult themes. And I just think it's bullshit because fans who watch this or audience that watch this have real human emotions and are dealing with real things. And like, just because it's in the sci-fi world, like, I always think that sci-fi allows us to make a lot of progress as humans because it's our imagination that allows us to really get closer to the truth. Whether warlocks and vampires exist in the world, I don't know. We might be all gone by then before they're like, oh my God, we found vampires exist. Yeah, but regardless, like, I think the duality, like you're saying, Kat, of it, it's with everyone. Everyone has their inner demons. Everyone has the angels that make it easier for them to live in this world. So, you know, I don't think that's untrue. So I really, you know, hats off to both of you too, to lead the show and to kind of get us to the place that we all needed to be and, you know, also be an ensemble cast as well.
Well, thank you, Harry. That means a lot. But, you know, something else I wanted to bring up is a very key piece of advice that you and Isaiah had for us at the very beginning. I remember it was the first dinner. I had just arrived in Toronto and we were all sitting around a table and you two sort of sat us down and went, all right, kids, you know, this could be a process that, you know, we could be together for a lot of years and this could be really great or it could be really terrible. So let's, you know, let's all be a family and let's be honest with each other and let's be a team. And that was such an instrumental moment. And I remember, you know, I didn't know how to lead a show. I was 19 years old. And I remember watching the two of you going, okay, this is how someone who's done this before operates and how they deal with people on set and how they, you know, handle situations professionally. And so tell us a little bit about your kind of beginning and your first impression of meeting everyone and getting to set and the kind of beginnings of creating this world once we all got to Toronto.
Yeah, I remember the first dinner we had. It was great. You know, I think what's important on any show or anything you work on, I mean, you know, whatever profession you're in or whatever family you're in, is just hoping that people are like, have a good head on their shoulders and have a good heart.
Yeah.
You know, when we talk about anything, people overemphasize like talent over things. And I just think it's very secondary now for me,
because
that you can build, that you can get better at. It's like, if you want someone to be part of your team, they better have a somewhat of a kind heart. You know, I think that you could build off that, because, you know, everyone's going through something and might not come off as that. But I think kindness and being able to process things in a way that is not going to let your emotions overtake your actions. And, you know, I saw that in all of you where it was, I just had that feeling that everyone has a good heart, whether some people are in different levels of their career of like experience wise, that can all be gained obviously off of one show. And then, you know, over time you'll start to experience more. Isaiah has obviously just been in it longer than I, so I admire him in a lot of ways. And he really took on that role. And I was like, oh shit, dude, is that me that I have to say something now? Because like, I still considered myself as that guy that was like, I'm just still learning. I'm just trying to figure this out. So to kind of do that. And I just also knew that y'all were smart and it was also best to like learn those things yourself. Until someone had to kind of come and be like, yeah, you're kind of fucking up now. Like, you know, maybe, you know, scale back a little, but, you know, you had to learn that yourself, or then you're going to constantly have people tell you like what to do. And you'll be like, well, fuck you. I don't want to do that. That's not how I do it.
Yeah.
So we saw that because, you know, y'all were young, like, what was it? Like 18 and then like 20 something,
20,
early 20s. I'm telling you, man, just putting it out there. This is one of the hardest things psychologically to do at a young age, because you know they're doing studies that like your brain doesn't really develop until you're 25 fully.
Yeah.
And when I look back in my 20s, I'm like, yeah, that's so true, because you're just trying to adjust to like this environment that's like hitting at you so hard.
Different human being.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you have to like act a certain way, and then it's like, well, why am I acting that way to just appease people instead of like finding things that like who you really are and trying to adjust to yourself, be like, okay, that doesn't help anybody in this situation. But it's also like not knowing how to communicate certain things, because being blunt, like, what does it mean to be blunt? Because, like, when you people say blunt force, like, that never sounds good, right? When you say you're like, oh, I'm just blunt, it's like, well, there's other ways to go about communicating something. And mm-hmm. I think these experiences that you all had and came out of, it makes me so happy that, you know, you guys are doing so well and being able to kind of really have a mindset that goes beyond going to a really bad place that a lot of young actors do. And, you know, I love seeing this cast thrive right now to, like, buying your new, you know, both of you buying your first house and being able to learn from whatever mistakes that you have made before. And kind of now you're going to be that in that same position where you're going to be telling these other actors, these younger actors, like, hey, yeah, you're not going to want to hear it from me, but when it's right time for you.
Yeah, trust me. These are the things you want to avoid.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Let's get into it whilst we're talking about being blunt. What was it like meeting Matt for the first time? Tell us a little about, like, everyone wants to hear about Malik. People are so excited about it. But tell me what
they just sort of seem to
naturally
good fit. One.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Dom, you're getting good at these segues. Bravo.
Yeah.
Matt, I remember when we met at dinner, he was actually pretty reserved during that dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't really gauge him. I was like,
oh, this is the dude I have to have a relationship with. Like, he doesn't even talk.
Interesting.
And then when you get to know him, you're like, yeah, that's not him. This dude talks. And we could tell you, this dude talks. We could
specific
talk
Matt rants, I think is the term we've landed on.
Yeah. And the most, like, I love that there is never going to be a dull moment with him, because you can have a conversation about anything and it'll be the most fascinating conversation. And because it could just be about, I don't know, like a
colonoscopies. Like a, it could be about anything.
Yeah, like, colonoscopies, like using Drano and the effects of using that, like just random shit.
Because he would, wouldn't he? We'd be talking about something at that round table and then our conversation would naturally sort of segue off and he would be on his phone. And then like 8 minutes later, he'd come back in and be like, oh, guys, this is fascinating. This is crazy. And he's back on that original topic.
Did you know that the original Drano was actually?
Well, he's, it's okay. So I'm working with this other producer on this other project. And, you know, we've been developing and I had the Zoom meeting with him. And he's just like, I met one of your co-stars and I didn't really put a two and two together. But I was out with him for like hours on end, like dinner, and then we're drinking, and then just late, like night, just having the best conversation. And then I didn't, until I got home, then I like looked him up and I was like, holy shit, he's working with you, or he's worked with you, and I'm working with him. And it just didn't put two and two together. And he's just like, I just had the best time talking to him because he's such a great conversationalist. And you know, it's just, it's true. The stories are true about Matt Daddario, that
all the legends are true.
And he is just like, he was just so fun to talk to and work with. And on top of that, if we're talking about particularly on the show, is just, we took it very seriously. Like, so we'd have deep conversations about this. And sometimes to the point where like, that doesn't matter. Like, why are we talking about how a hand moves on this part? Like, but we would go into these details that is very much Matt Daddario, and to be able to kind of like hear his perspectives was just, I think really made the relationship special, because his mind just, it's like seeing that dot on your shirt that kind of you have to pull off. You're like, why are you okay? That didn't really matter, but I guess I'll take it off me. It's right. Like that detail oriented.
Well, I think that's a big part too of why, you know, I've always given massive props to the both of you, and Tom and I have mentioned this many times before on the podcast, how much time and effort and energy you two put into crafting this relationship and to making it not just the sort of poster child for this representation that we had in our show, but you really wanted to make it a real, authentic, nuanced relationship. And, you know, that's part of why the show won these GLAAD awards and part of why the show became such an iconic piece for this kind of representation. And a lot of that has to do with your care and time that you guys took. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me to hear this, but it's just a huge testament to your work.
Yeah, thanks. And I think it also helped that, you know, he loved food as much as I did, because we would have a lot of conversations just eating like nonstop. And the fact that how much he loved food was just made it so much easier. It's such a weird thing to say, but I don't know, that there's something there that kind of just brings people together.
Dude, I totally get it.
And Matt being a well traveler, right? He's a well traveled person. So like being able to talk to him about different foods just made it all easier. Anyways, Matt Daddario is awesome. He's what do we call Matt?
He's still saved as the Godfather on my phone.
Godfather? Okay.
He's saved as do not answer on my phone.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about the fandom, because obviously Malik is such a huge beloved treasure of the fandom. So what's that been like for you, sort of going through this process of, we've done so many Comic-Cons all over the world and we live tweeted every episode. What's that been like for you? Because obviously you experienced this huge fandom with Glee, but this, you know, it seems like it's a very different experience.
Yeah, this is very different. I'm curious to hear it on your guys' ends too, you know, because I think we experienced the kind of the fandom similarly and differently. I'm just blown away at like realizing how impactful these stories are and these characters are. I just, you know, it's beyond me, beyond whatever I could have done
because, you know, I think, you know, the setup was all there with in the books with, you know, Cassandra Clare and the writers on the show, and just compounding over time, it allows us to do what we do and to have this effect on being the face of it in a lot of ways, you know? So we have this weird shift of responsibility that I'd never fully understood, and I still kind of don't. But what I do understand about why it's being like embraced and people are so affected by it is just the lack of being able to see characters being, I always see like domesticated, like just like not always fighting for this, on this evil war and, you know, fighting for the sake of humanity. Cause, you know, we all see those like end of world movies and you're just like, oh, that's a disaster. But over time, you're just kind of like, okay, what does it mean to save? What are you saving when you're saving the world? Right. You're saving relationships. You're saving people.
Wow. That's interesting. Cause we did. Yeah. We had this whole section with you guys where there was this sort of domesticated like turmoil where it was like, we're going to cook dinner for Maris. And that's like real human beings' problems. That's normal stuff that people go through. That. Like, let's meet the in-laws.
Our parents were dead or evil. We didn't get to do that on the show.
Thank God. But that's sort of a huge part of it, isn't it? Like this humanization of these, like you were saying, these sort of super fantastical stories that are told, that we get to like ground them. And so much of that came through you and Matt, and you know, we as the rest of the cast as well have a huge amount to thank you guys for the effort and the grace and the passion that you put into these guys, and also making them these real characters that we grew to love and deeply care about.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned that, Dom, because in rewatching the show, I think we've talked about this a little bit, there's all these little details, little physicalities or little lines that you've added or just little remarks or, you know, giggles that you have off to the side.
Oh my God, my favorite one. We got to talk about it. My favorite Harryism. The one when in season one is my favorite. When you're doing the autopsy with Emerald and you just did this like any other human being would hold their nose like this. And you went and just plugged your nose. And I remember watching it for the first time and thought,
you did, you were like,
yeah,
this.
Dude. And it's like the coolest, like that's exactly what Magnus would do. Matt, it's exactly what he would do. Like it's the coolest, like it's like elegant and you're just like, there's a dead body, I'm not into it. And then you sort of walk out. And it's the coolest thing. It's just so perfect.
And we see it time and time again too. And actually it's reflected in the show. Cause we just came off of watching episode 6, which is of Men and Angels, which is the one where Luke comes in and he's got the werewolf scar and you know, it's the first time we get to see Magnus as the apothecary that he is. And it sort of dawned on me watching you have such a mastery. And again, it goes back to your movement, but they created a whole set for you because of what you brought to the character. They created Magnus as apothecary later on because of what you brought. And it's just it taught me so much and such a brilliant example of a little detail you bring to a character that becomes this humanization can take on a whole other life.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I don't remember doing
but I believe y'all
and trust y'all, and I guess just, you know, it when we're talking about those like little details and the you know kind of humanizing, I think that's what's important, because when we talk about like, you know, it's so hard because we put words about like representing, like I don't quite understand what that fully means yet. You know, you kind of have to go way deeper. And I know that's kind of like, you know, a thing that people use to kind of just help more underserved characters or people on our screens. And I think obviously there's an importance on that. But I think the humanization of people and cultures and even on this where, you know, I think Todd and Darren are showrunners really saw a lot of that put, because I know there was like, you both had like a first date thing, which I thought y'all played brilliantly, you know, with Maya and Simon. And those are the things that are like, you giggle. And like, as a fan, you're just like, oh, I want to see that. I want to see these characters squirm and how are they going to act putting themselves against the corner. And, but also realizing like, you didn't really know this person that well. And then it's like, what is that relationship really beyond like maybe lust or And that was so cool to see on your, and those are the things that I was interested, because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's kind of like medical show, like Grey's Anatomy. Like, you can learn so much. It's not, you're not going to watch some do surgery.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't, I mean, yeah, there's, that's what they do. And, you know, they help people. But at the end of the day, it's like what happens after that. And that's totally kind of what I feel like the show was on Shadowhunters.
Well, speaking of what happens after Shadowhunters, before we let you go, we have to touch on Crazy Rich Asians, which, you know, you're part of the resurgence of the rom-com, and it's such a fantastic film, and Everything Everywhere All at Once. You have so many incredible projects happening as you move forward in the future. So tell us a little bit about life after Shadowhunters.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's been fun to kind of explore different genres. You know, I got to do a kind of romantic comedy drama, you know, shortly after, and with All My Life. And then I did a really cool, really cool indie called Broadcast Signal Intrusion, which is out in the UK now.
Which is so good. Broadcast Signal Intrusion is so good. It messed with my head so much, but it's so good.
Yeah, it was just a fun, like, it's one of those films where, you know, the audience, you know, if you're wanting to watch something where you kind of don't have to think, then that might not be a movie for you. But this movie definitely has a lot of audience engagement, in the sense of, like, you're part of this journey and you have to figure some stuff out along with this character. And it was like a psychological thriller. And that was just really, really fun to do. And it was actually like my first full lead role ever. And to be able to kind of be part of that with director Jacob Gentry, who is a brilliant filmmaker. And so I got to explore doing that. And then, you know, with Crazy Rich Asians, that was kind of in the middle of Shadowhunters, or towards the end. You know, that movie was obviously just, you know, it really made an impact and to the kind of like the zeitgeist or whatever. And it's cool to hopefully, you know, be able to continue that. And, you know, with Everything Everywhere All at Once, going back to my music video day, I was just a big fan of the Daniels, the directors. If you've never watched like Turn Down for What and like that video, and even like the most like the obscure ones that people don't know about, like they just have a crazy sensitivity to like be able to make the most ridiculous list of kind of things in life to be incredibly emotional. And I just was a big fan of theirs. And then to be able to like be part of their film was just so, I feel so grateful to kind of, I guess, for the hobbies I have of like just being fans of things, and to be able to work with these guys, but that are also just super fucking kind and like so amazing to work with, to see like these DIY type directors that can just do it all themselves, not all themselves, but like have a group of people that can really make something feel very like college experiment on a grander scale. Cool. So it's just kind of exploring these people, you know, the working with different people that kind of just are very inspiring, and developing right now. I'm developing like four or five projects right now that kind of, I wouldn't say hit different genres, but kind of a little bit genre bending. One in particular I'm really excited about that I wrote that has a lot to do with dance and mental illness and kind of a very family drama driven. And, you know, it's a film right now. I'm just kind of in the early stages of getting it all put together. But, you know, so just working on stuff like that and being able to really tell the stories that I want to tell and be part of and work with people that I want to work with, and just enjoying the shit out of doing what we do. So I'm happy to be here talking to y'all and reminiscing about those stories that kind of were untold. And so thank you for having me. This is it's an honor to be able to go back and speak fondly of our times together.
It's our truest pleasure.
And, you know, something we're finding, especially with people like you, is that, you know, there's so much to talk about. We'll definitely have to have you back. You know, we'll count this as your season one interview. And if you'd grace us with your presence again, when we kind of get a little deeper into the series, we're trying not to spoil it too much, because we're finding that, you know, so many people are new to the show, that as we kind of dive in, we want to get into more detail about.
Is it possible to spoil it anymore? Like, what is the like kind of line of like spoiling?
We don't know.
That's
yet.
That's sort of the whole thing. I've really been struggling with this, because there are people who are watching. We've seen there are people who are watching the show with the rewatch of the podcast. They're watching an episode, then listening to the podcast afterwards for the first time.
Yeah.
So I do episodes, and I'm like, oh yeah, remember, because then this happens in season two. And I'm like, ah, shit, I can't say that yet because people haven't seen it. I'm like, for the people who have seen it, you know what happens. But for the people who haven't, just keep watching and we'll talk about it later on in the podcast. It's a whole new world to me.
It's a whole new world.
Do you like, does it mess with you guys if you are watching something and someone says, well, yeah, that person dies? Does it like ruin it for you, or does it kind of like, we're like, yeah. Oh, it does if someone tells you?
Yeah. And I've done it with Alberto too. I think it was Game of Thrones. We were just talking like and having drinks, yeah. And I'm like, oh, well, this happens. Or like, no, it wasn't that. It was like in conversation. I was like, well, then, you know, when this happens, I was like detached from it or whatever. I was just sort of making my point through this thing that happens. And I watched his face go, what? I was like, oh no, I'm so sorry. And I instantly
In all
knew
fairness,
that I messed
Dom,
up.
I think it was 3 a.m. and we were all, yeah, we'd all lost our mind by that point on set. But no, I think for me, it depends on the project. Like there's certain projects. I'm like, yeah, you can spoil the movie for me, or you can, you know, spoil whatever. It doesn't matter. But certain things, certain shows, I'm like, I will remove myself from the situation.
Yeah. No, I
don't want to know.
I hear you. Especially something like where you do, it's part of the experience, right? Of going like, yeah. No!
The right.
Exactly.
Yeah. I hear you.
Well, Harry, this has been incredible. And thank you so much for being here. And we just adore you. And we'll continue to gush about you for till the end of time.
Feelings mutual. Love you guys. And yeah, thank you so much. It's just so good to see y'all. Y'all are thriving.
Well, as are you. And
evidently because of you guys.
Well, drink soon. Hang soon. Yeah. I want to see Alberto too. I want to see Emron. I want to see everyone. So let's get the gang together.
We'd love that. Thank you so much for being a part of this. And to everyone who listened, who knows what an amazing role model, actor, friend, father, husband Harry is, then I want you to join me in saying thank you. And for all you new people, welcome to Harry Shum Jr. into your lives. I hope you get a quarter of as much enjoyment as we have from knowing him, because that's really special. So thank you very much, mate.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Before we go, we just wanted to remind you to subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, why don't you go ahead and leave us a review too?
Oh, yes, please. You are absolute angels. Bye.
Take care.
Return to the Shadows is hosted and executive produced by Catherine McNamara and Dominic Sherwood. Our executive producer is Ling Lee. Our senior producers are Liz Hayes and Diego Tapia, and our producers are Hannah Harris and Kristen Vermilia. Original music by Alex Kinsey and performed by Alex Kinsey and Catherine McNamara. The episode was mixed by Seth Alansky.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid Kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases, and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.